Welcome to the Talk Over podcast, a conversational platform for the DJs, by the DJs, brought to you by Double and Stylus.
Swag.
Tune in every week to hear us talk about all the things we see, hear and experience as DJs. Don't forget to subscribe to the channel by simply searching Talk Over podcast on either Spotify or Apple Music.
Yo, I'll tell you what I did the other day. I recorded a mix and I left a metronome on.
Yeah.
After I rendered it down, and it rendered down with the metronome in it. And then I deleted the mix.
What do you mean the metronome? What did you use a metronome for the mix for?
Basically, I wanted to mix it down and boost some of the levels, so I threw it back into the software after I recorded it. I recorded it through Serato, then I threw it into Logic. Not sometimes the click just plays automatically when you open up a new template.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
I never turned it off. By accident, I didn't think anything of it. I just boosted the levels, and then rendered it off, threw the file away because I'm used to doing it so much.
Yeah.
Fucking played it. The click's there.
Shit. So what you got to do? Redo the thing.
Redo the whole mix, man.
Fuck's sake. Was that the Crep Protect one?
No, it was a different one, but I was just trying to do one to get my Mixcloud moving again because I'm not putting nothing on there for about 19 years. I was like, let me just do one. Anyway, didn't go to plan, mate. So, yeah, it's in the bin.
Are you recording already?
Yeah, I'm recording. So there's a little story for you guys.
That is the perfect segue. That's the perfect segue. So that would count as a mistake that you've made that you would learn from. And that wasn't even on purpose. I love that.
Turn off the metronome, man. Do you know what? Yeah, I literally didn't even think about it because I swear I didn't think it would render off with a metronome in the mix.
You do exactly what I do, and it's the worst. It's one of the worst habits when you're creating content is throwing away master files and original files before testing the final. Like I do it so often because I'm OCD with it, and I like to keep my desktop clean and everything like that. So
free up the space, man. You want the space in it, like
exactly. So, but I'll do it, and also what I don't want to do is end up with like four versions of the same thing. So once it's done and into the next process, I throw the last process away. But
same,
bro, I do it so often and then forget to check the newest version. Throw the old version out, check the new version, and then there's something wrong with it. And it's like, oh, shit.
Man was out here Googling how to, like, hack the trash can. You know, after you've emptied the trash.
You do exactly what I do, innit? You put it in the trash can and then just empty the trash can.
Straight away, bro. I'm proper anal like that with keeping my computer clean. Like, I literally straight in the trash, deletion, realised what I'd done. The next day when I'd gone to play it back, ready to upload... All I'm hearing is dun, 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 dun. And bro, I even downloaded the remix the other day that had the click in it, but the click was in time. So like, I was thinking, is that meant to be part of the record, or is that producer completely fucked up the bass?
Oh mate,
God, one of them.
Anyway, how long was that?
Nice and double back in the bitch, mate. Nice intro. Mix was an hour long.
Oh, and was there like, knowing you, there was some techers in there as well, like not just a basic mix, like...
Techers in there, bro, man, like, yeah, I'll never do it again, so yeah, I learnt from my mistake.
Oh, horrendous. Anyway, hashtag TalkOverPodClart,
yes,
we're here.
Do you know what, I've just realised, I don't even use hashtag TalkOverPodClart, I just realised. I don't even use it, bruv. I just put podcast in it by accident.
Yeah.
You started this bloody podclart thing.
And bruv, it's the best thing because I get messages from people like, oh, the latest podclart is amazing. Like it's really a thing now. I love it, bruv.
Yeah,
I love
it. It is a thing. Someone tried to jack our swag.
Yeah. So just so you lot know, this is the original DJs podcast for the DJs, by the DJs, and that's all I'm saying.
Someone called their thing the podclart.
Yeah.
I don't know who it was. I don't know where I've seen it. I think someone sent it on Instagram.
No, someone sent it to me on WhatsApp. I sent you the screenshot.
Okay, that was it. There you go.
They have a podclart. And then there's another one that's come up that's for the DJs, by the DJs. Nah, that's us.
We are the original clarts.
That's us. But, you know, whenever you create something incredible, there's always people that create sub-versions of your incredibleness.
So, B-Tech versions.
B-Tech versions. But thanks, guys. Thanks for showing love. to the originators.
We're two years deep, bro. We've been
happy
out
here. Happy
birthday. I know. It's mad. Yeah. It's mad. We are going to do something special for the anniversary. We've not forgot, by the way.
Yeah.
Doubles just being long right now, isn't it? Because it's got a lot going on.
Yeah, basically, everyone that listens knows. Like,
we'll just all blame Double right now.
No. I'm fully here to take the slack for it because...
Nah, it's all good. It's all good. I'm only joking, G. I just had to put you on your toes live on live.
No, it is me, though. It's Thursday now. We usually record on Mondays. And obviously, with my career change going from being five times a week club DJ to... a five times a week primary school teacher.
Kindergarten cop.
Yeah. kindergarten DJ in teaching a seven-year-old. What was I teaching today? Just this morning, we were doing the 10 times table and divisions.
Oh, my days. I feel like I need to be taught them, mate. My brain.
Well, I tell you what, yeah. There's some stuff in the curriculum that I actually had to look up for Monday. Monday, we were working on... nouns, adjectives, and expanded adjective phrases. Fair. I looked at this and I was like, what the fuck? So yeah, I had to look it up. Yeah, so I now re-know what a noun, an adjective, and expanded adjective phrase is. Anyway, yeah, this lockdown's bullshit.
Anyway, so we're back in the building on a Thursday.
Back in the building, and yeah, the last few episodes we've been speaking a lot about like the current situation, which really hasn't developed a lot since the last episode. So obviously, like, we're all in lockdown across the world. Like, it's not just the UK. DJs are coming up with new and creative ways. Everyone's live streaming. Some are doing it a lot better than others. Some are finding their way and really finding their feet and pulling numbers in. Others are still just IG live with their mum. But all of that's kind of irrelevant today, because today we're going to pull it back, go back in time a little bit, and we're going to talk about certain mistakes or things that throughout our career we would have changed.
This is an interesting one still, because Doubles has thrown this on me like 5 minutes before we went live. I've not even had a chance
no
to
prep.
Think.
There's no
so
prep.
So I don't even know what's going to come out right now.
So, yeah, we didn't prep this at all. We just sat down and Stylus was like, what are we going to talk about today? And I was like, I know. Let's talk about the mistakes. So, yeah, basically, like, okay. The first thing for me that comes to mind is when I started DJing, right? So I think I'm going to say probably about 17, 18 when I started around the club age. Basically, I was so set in my ways. Someone suggested to me to do radio and stuff, and someone suggested like being a little bit more versatile. But bro, I was so set in my ways. I was like, nope, I'm only ever doing clubs. I'm only doing R&B and hip hop, and that's going to be me. I'm just going to dominate this. Da, 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 da. So like, I'd definitely say as things have progressed and, you know, we've done episodes talking about like the end game and our escape plans and stuff like that. And especially now, as club DJing isn't a thing because we're on lockdown, it's one of those things that over time, obviously, it's evolved for me. But if I could tell a younger me to change my perspective on that, it would be like, nah, don't just focus on clubs. Be versatile with it. Do you know what I mean? Or look to do radio or something, some other kind of platform. Like, get out there and do that.
Yeah, but you did do radio from early though, innit?
No, not from early. I didn't do it from early.
I feel like you've been doing radio for time.
I have. So my first radio show was 2011.
Oh, okay. 9 years.
Might have been 2012.
Okay, I forget how long we've been out here, innit? So like even then, like you would still been DJing for a hot minute.
Yeah. So that's the thing. So like, but I mean, I remember because my first radio show was this is such a random fact, bro. My first radio show was an online station in Bangkok.
Yeah, I've heard this one. That's mad.
That was my first radio residency. I had a weekly show in a station in Bangkok. Called UB Radio, Underground Bangkok Radio. And my first two shows were live in Bangkok at the station. And then obviously I was only in Bangkok for those 2 weeks. And then once that trip was over, I used to send a pre-wrecked show every week.
That is a bruv.
Do you want to know an even more random fact, which I'm not even sure the artist knows this as a fact, right? Stylo G, Call Me a Yardie. The first time it was ever played on radio or anywhere in public before the video even dropped, the first time Stylo G, Call Me a Yardie was played on radio, it was from a radio station in Bangkok in Thailand.
That's mad.
That's a crazy fact.
That was the first time it was ever played on radio indefinitely.
Rob, that was the first time it was ever played outside of Stylo's studio by someone that wasn't Stylo G.
That's a madness.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, you and Stylo go back, innit?
We got history, yeah, man. Yeah. We go a long way back.
Man popped up in the live the other day licking out Jamaica flags.
He's such a G, bro. I think he's
just popped
in,
had a quick one, licked up a few flags and bounced.
Yeah. I think he's actually in Jamaica right now. I think he went to Jamaica for a lockdown. I'm not 100% certain, but I think he is. But yeah, so that was a proper, I've taken myself right off on a tangent. For the first portion of my career, literally, I was... Nah, you know what? It couldn't have been 2011. It must have been earlier than that. Oh, well, that's irrelevant.
You've always been a bit stubborn, though, innit? You have your own ways now, obviously. You're more open-minded with what you're doing in regards to radio, you're presenting and all that stuff. But I can see where you would have been earlier on, because you still have them traits in you now.
Yeah.
Double as his ways, man. I get it, though.
But again, maybe that's something that I should adapt and change about myself. Do you know what I mean? Because there's definitely times where my stubbornness has worked against me, or my set in my ways has worked against me when it could have worked in my favor if I'd been a bit more open for things. But that's as a first, if someone said, like, what was the first mistake you made as a DJ? That would definitely be the first thing that came to mind, was like, starting this with a very narrow-minded view. I was aware of other things that you could do, but I was just like, no, I want to be known as a DJ. And if I'm anything else, then I'm not a DJ. Do you know what I mean? But then using someone like Semtex is a really good example, because he's a presenter, he's a DJ, he's been an A&R. Do you know what I mean? He's like very, very high up in Sony now doing what he does. Yeah. So, like, he's been attacking the industry from so many different angles that he's put himself in the position he's in. Do you know what I mean? He's just one example. Yeah. There's a lot of people that do this. But for me, I had absolutely no interest in doing radio, in working for a label, because as far as I saw it, even though it's within the music industry, it wasn't DJing. And I wanted to just DJ. But that was like... the very young me, obviously not thinking about the fact that when I touch 50, when I'm 60, etc., I'm not still going to be DJing in the clubs.
Yeah.
I've definitely messed up some opportunities over the years for the same reason, to be fair. Like, where I've had residences and there's been frictions there, and most times I'll just allow it most times and just crack on and move forward, and then a year or two later I'll look back and like, maybe that wasn't the right decision, you know, them ones. But because I've been semi-stubborn in the way that I do my stuff and the way I approach my club set and my profession, so if it doesn't kind of fall the way I'm expecting it, normally I'll just bounce, not even in a bad way, but then when I look back, there's definitely a few times over the years where something could have blossomed into something proper, but I never give it the chance because I was stuck in my own ways, innit?
Do you know what I mean?
And that went up. It's probably happened a handful of times, but bro, when I first started DJing, I was the complete opposite to you. I wanted to attack everything, innit? Like, radio was my initial. That was my initial dream. Like, I remember when One Extra first started, I remember being plugged into like the opening broadcast. Yeah. And like this, I was like, this shit is amazing. Like, radio was something that I always wanted to do. So straight off from the cuff, I was just trying to. I remember just sending endless amounts of mixtapes to One Extra. Yeah, I couldn't even present, bro.
Right. Yeah.
I was doing a pirate show on Unity, which is a local station. This was before they went FM or anything, and I couldn't present. I was just in there chatting breeze and flipping recording mixes, and I just used to send endless tapes, endless mixes to One Extra for like the first 2 years, must have been the first 2-3 years that they were broadcasting, to the point where they actually called me, innit?
Right.
And we're like, yo, come, we want to get you in to come down. We want to get you to come down. And I remember going down, and it was Bucky at the time. I don't think she works there anymore. She's probably moved on. I remember going in, and they had a cardboard box full of all the stuff that I'd sent. And there must have been like, I don't even know, 50, 60, 70 demos in there. I couldn't even present. I couldn't even present. So when they got me in to try and sit down and do a pilot, I remember just absolutely flopping it. But my hunger and desire to want to do everything just ended up getting me in a room where I had no fucking idea what I was even doing there or how I'm going to even do this thing. So like my hunger and passion kind of went against me. And I remember leaving that place so wounded. Because I just wasn't ready in it, but I was just letting the hunger and the passion to want to be on radio like control me instead of actually thinking about where I'm actually at, and I can't even do this yet, but I'm gonna go for it anyway. So I semi kind of learnt the hard way. A man drove all the way to London, drove all the way back in the same day, and got set and just got a pie in the face. But
wait there, one sec.
Doubles going, doubles getting off. Right, where's he gone? Double has left the podcast.
What happened was I had the feed set up wrong on my side, so it was actually recording your voice as well.
Oh my days! So is that can we still use that audio?
Yeah. It'd still be possible. I've just got to do some chopping now. the technicals. Bro.
Oh my days!
Right, we're back in. So you just got nothing but airtime from One Extra.
Yeah, man, it was just, but I remember just having that gung-ho mentality, bro, and that was what kind of went against me. If I could go back, and I wouldn't have been so obsessively hungry to be successful and just kind of rolled with the punches, man, because I got caught out a couple times because I just wanted to just do this thing, and I should have just settled and just rolled with it and learnt my craft, and obviously ended up doing pure broadcast on One Extra eventually anyway, but like, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years later.
So it was a bit
premature. Whereas you were saying then, like, flipping, you just wanted to do the whole DJ thing and you rolled with it.
I had absolutely no interest in the early days about doing anything but club DJing. And even to a point where I was like, I don't even want to do anything outside of R&B and hip hop. I found dancehall quite early in my career. So I started playing dancehall and bashment as well. But house, drum and bass, wasn't interested, bruv. And it wasn't until 2008. In 2008, I realised I need to be more versatile. And that was because I did a residency abroad for the whole summer. And there was another DJ that I did it with. He played house, I played the R&B and hip-hop, but then I realised, like, nah, to do a whole club night by yourself like this, you need to be able to do all the music. So I learned to mix house in 2008.
Okay.
Basically. And that was when I kind of was able to then start doing open format sets. But going back to those times as well, I'd definitely say it. So another mistake that I would change going back then, around 2008, when I was doing the summer seasons through that time, like 2008, 2009, 2010, I spent a lot of time like online because I was helping the club book DJs, innit? Book acts and stuff. So I spent a lot of time basically online networking with DJs, and especially from One Extra, because this is the time where I think I might be getting my timeline wrong, but it was around the time where I was starting to get interested in radio as well. So I thought, okay, cool. Let me start mixing with the people that are on radio, helping them get work, and then in return, I might make friends in higher places, basically. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's when I started getting like a lot of the One Extra guys at the time, getting them bookings out in like Greece and all the places that I was doing, being a resident in the clubs. I was getting the clubs to book them, fly them out, and then obviously I was spending like a couple of days with them while they're out there, showing them about, taking them for food, etc., etc.
Oh,
but some
shocking.
Of the guys actually became quite... Is it bad?
Yeah. It's not working very well, mate. You keep cutting off.
Oh, bad times.
Oh, they don't want us to win.
They don't want us to win this one. Some of the times, yeah, with some of the guys that I worked with, I'm still cool with now. Like, I'm still friends with to this day. But other ones, I realised, like, really didn't care. But what I did wrong was... just for example, yeah, I did a lot of work with Cameo, like DJ Cameo, for example.
Cameo, go on.
And I got him a lot of overseas bookings around that time. And then what I was kind of hoping is, in return, I would be able to have like a sort of a way into One Extra. Does that make sense? So like he would then be able to help me, I'm not talking about get me a show, but help me like begin the path to how I could get through that way. But as soon as it was over, as soon as the bookings were over, airtime. But what I didn't realize, bruv, is like, this might not have been his mentality, but some people, for example, when they're in those positions, they're not going to open the doors for other younger, hungry DJs because that's potentially a threat to them. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So where I'm going with this is, the mistake that I would have made there is by thinking that certain people in the position, the people in the position that I would like to be in, aren't going to let me get into that position because that takes it away from them potentially. Or that might be their mind state. So the people to actually start networking with, and I didn't learn this until very late, is the people that actually make the decisions, the producers, the execs. Do you know what I mean? Like, I didn't start networking with producers till really late in the radio game for me.
Bro, that's actually a sick shout, you know. I didn't even think of it like that because I did the same thing, innit? You feel like, before you know any better, you feel like the DJs hold the keys.
Yeah,
when in reality, it's the complete opposite. Like, I always had this thing, yeah, like, when DJs would, like, tag me in mixes and I'm thinking, I'm not your market, innit? Like, obviously, I'll check out your mix or whatever, but, like, I'm not your market. I'm another DJ. Like, you want to be hitting the people. Like, and the same in regards to, like, getting a radio show. Like, the DJs are not the people that can really put you on. You might be able to, like, plug you in to an extent, if they're not bad mind, or like CJ Beats, prime example, we've said it before, like, he would bring so many example. DJs through and would be willing to like put people on and then plug you into the producers, but in reality, like, the production are the people that are going to essentially put you on and help you in it. And that's where I think I made the same mistake in it. I was doing the same thing. I was trying to network and rub shoulders with all these DJs, and to be fair, I'm still friends with a lot of them still to this day in it, but It took a while to figure out because I didn't really know the backbone of how a station worked. I didn't know about... Bruv, when I first went to One Extra and you told me you had two men on deck like producing your show and I couldn't believe it. I'm like, I've been out here doing drive time for 3-4 years on my own, producing the content, doing the idents, doing the interviews, doing the interview prep. I couldn't believe it when I went in there and you've got people passing your notes and assisting with your stuff. I was thinking, blood, is this how it goes? But yeah, I agree, man. I feel like man definitely made that mistake too. I'd be doing the same shit as you, bro. Trying to maneuver around these DJs abroad on the holiday islands, hitting Napa and that. And like, I remember connecting with Rampage for the first time out there, and loads of other little bits. And yeah, man, defo the same way, man. 100%.
Yeah,
that's mad. That's a mad one. Still,
it's funny because there's, from an outsider's perspective, the DJ or the presenter on the show for radio, for example, they are the face of it. And if they're like, you don't really, apart from Charlie Slough was the first DJ I remember who really put his producer in like the presenter seat. Because obviously Delisa became like basically a household name.
I feel like producers are like part of the show now a little bit, like to an extent, like especially for solo DJs. It just gives that little bit. Oh, he's hung up. Brass. Right, he hung up on me. Wasn't feeling that conversation.
Carry on.
He wasn't feeling that conversation. I feel like the producers are part of the show now, innit? Especially for solo DJs. Because it just gives that extra. Just gives you something to bounce off, innit?
Yes and no. Like,
I did a solo show for years with no producer.
Yeah.
Like, I had no one to, like, bounce off. But it definitely gives it just allows you to open up conversation a little bit. Do you know what I mean? It just gives extra elements.
Maybe, do it on your own, though, also, for sure. It also depends on the producer, though, because I've heard some presenters in the past to be like, "Oh, right, well, producer John, what do you think of that?" And then producer John in the background be like, "It's okay," because
they've got to have 100%. They got to have something about him, innit?
Personalities. But using Delisa again as a perfect example, she obviously, her and Charlie were friends while he was doing the show, mm-hmm. and like, she just proper played along with his character for the show. Do you know what I mean? Like all the bantery stuff. She was just on it as well. Like the energy was good, and yeah. But like yeah. For example, she was the one that was in charge of the show, I feel. So like whenever I was doing anything, and you'll know this as well, whenever anything was going on content wise for that, you don't send it to Charlie, you send it to Delisa, because she's the producer. Charlie's like the presenter. He was the face of the show, but it wasn't necessarily his show. Do you know what I mean? It was the team around it that were creating the show, and he was just driving it in the right direction.
Does that make sense? That's real.
But I feel like that's definitely something. If I could go back now and tell the younger me at a certain stage, I'd be like, look, don't worry about trying to be friends with all the DJs everywhere that's on the network.
It obviously helps, isn't it, if you've got friends in the building.
It does.
Because I found myself, when I went down there for the first time, I knew a lot of people in there, so everyone was like, "Oh, yes, Ty, what's going on?" kind of thing. Like, and that definitely helped. And I think even the producers kind of thought, "Oh shit, so like, he's got a couple friends in here," kind of thing. So like, I feel like that definitely helps.
100%.
In regards to getting put on, don't put your focus into that.
All I'm saying is, like, I've said it already. There's DJs and presenters who are in the position, but they are not willing and will never help you get a show, because ultimately it threatens their position. And like, mm-hmm. it's a sad fact. It's a sad fact of life. Like, they will have struggled or fought or worked as hard as they can to get to that position. So a lot of people have that mentality of, well, I've had my struggles to get here. Why should I just open the door for you? Like, you need to go to war as well to get in the same position and earn your stripes. Like, I don't necessarily agree with that mentality. I don't agree with just having it handed to you either, but the lesson I learned there was that they're either not in a position of power to get you somewhere that you need to be, or they don't want to. Plain and simple, they just don't want to help, because ultimately you're a threat. And I felt that kind of way, because
I feel like that goes on a lot in the game, but not even in radio. I feel like that happens a lot in the DJ industry in general, innit? But like, if you're worth your salt and you know what you offer, like, you shouldn't see everyone else as a threat. Like, I'm not afraid to put other DJs on. Or shout about someone else doing something dope, or sharing someone's shit, because like, I'm confident in what I'm already in what I do anyway.
Same.
So like, I feel like that kind of stuff is just insecurities, isn't it?
It definitely is, and it's exactly what I'm saying. Like, because they don't want you to get into a position where you could potentially move them out of theirs.
Right,
and that's what it is, because for whatever reason they're not confident enough in their position. And going back to, like, we've referenced him so often on this podcast, like, CJ Beats was the perfect example. He had an absolutely banging show, and then what he did was he opened the door for so many of us to actually do our first national radio broadcasts, because he was giving us guest mixes. And it was through Amy. Do you remember Amy, his producer?
Amy's a G-man.
She was then in charge of doing Extra Talent, which is how you and I both got on to doing actual live broadcasts.
Yo, do you remember when we did the Underground Kings joint? Remember when we did the show together?
Yeah, that was a sick show, you know.
See, this is the thing, yeah. Like, one of my mistakes that I was going to get to was definitely not keeping consistent with the radio. Like, we all, because obviously I was on it hard, bro. But like, when I lost the drive time, I kind of didn't pursue it like I should have. I should have stayed on it, because I look back now and I think if I kept that consistency and that drive, like, who knows where that could have ended up? Because, like, already, like, I ended up making friends with Charlie through drive time clashing with his show when he first started. So, like, because the show had generated that much power, we had people hitting my show up when they'd hit Charlie's up. And we'd always get putting these tweets together about people knowing what kind of show to listen to. And essentially, that's how like, I ended up making friends with him. And he obviously ended up putting me on in the end anyway. But I just feel like I made a mistake not staying consistent with it after I lost that show, because I put so many years and effort into it. I was just like, is this really me? Like, am I going to get on one extra? Like, I'd done all the live shows and I'd done this. And then to have your legs cut off, I just never had the heart to go back into it. And then obviously, it's come full circle now. A man's here setting up this compound, which is my own thing, and where I'm just going to try and put all that experience, all the broadcasting bits, all the stuff without one extra, DJing, everything all into this with the visual stuff that I've learned, and try and put it all together into that. But yeah, one mistake I definitely made was not keep... I think consistency wins, innit? If you can stay consistent, 100%, with what,
bro.
If you can stay consistent with what you're doing and you keep pushing and plowing, like that 3 years of drive time opened up endless doors for me, innit? So when I look back, if I carried that, if I carried that on, that was definitely a big mistake for me personally. I should never have stopped.
Yeah, but I think I see it on the flip side, bro. I think I did radio for 1 year too long, because when I lost the passion for the radio eventually, when there were various politics at the station that I was at, and I just decided to knock it on the head because it was just getting long, and that's when I started going full steam with my YouTube. But
yeah,
what I wish I'd done is I wish I'd recognised a year before, because it was a year before that I started to feel like I was plateauing within the radio community. And that's when I should have been like, right, okay, this boat has taken me as far as it will take me now. I need to hop off and get onto something else. And But instead, I've always had this thing where like, I get comfortable in it, and I'm almost not afraid, but I guess, yeah, you could call it afraid. I'm almost afraid to cut something off to try and find a new challenge, because I don't want to end up... I don't want it to be a waste of time. Like, you know, obviously, everything I learned at radio and all the contacts I made, it could never have been a waste of time. But I'm not pursuing a career in radio now. If it falls in my lap, cool, I'll probably take it, especially now as I'm not working in the clubs right now. But I'm not constantly knocking on the door at One Extra to try and get a show anymore. Do you know what I mean? But
yeah, but bruv, do you know what? Yeah, the One Extra thing, that was like the dream. So when I cut that off, and I just thought, this is kind of not going to happen, innit? And I lost my heart for it. Same way as you, it was politics. We had the same kind of politics at our station. But when I stopped doing that show, the passion was still there, innit? I should have carried on doing it in other ways, whether it was pursuing another network or trying... Like, the wifey always used to say, oh, try Capital or try this. And I'd just be like, oh, the stubbornness. I'd go back to the stubbornness thing. That platform's not really for me. I don't want to do that station. Like, I'm not built for Q103, this, whatever. Like, I want to be... I'm a bit rough around the edges, presenter-wise. So, like, One Extra was perfect, innit? So the stubbornness there kind of killed me.
The thing that One Extra did great was they take young presenters and they...
develop them with their pilot programs
they develop it, but they allow the presenters to do and be who they are, whereas with the other stations, Kiss and Capital for example, you have to be very very polished and you have to be their type of presenter. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you listen to it, every presenter...
I did a demo for Kiss
there,
bro. I did one for Kiss, and they asked for stuff to be a certain way and the links and that, and I was just this is not for me. Like,
yeah, it's all very very polished and very clean. Funny thing about fuck's sake, sorry guys, this FaceTime keeps cutting off.
Is so poor, he's hung up again. Sorry guys, Double, that's no credit. this is not going well at all, mate, today. Yeah.
The apocalypse does not want us clarting today.
Jesus Christ.
Funny thing about Kiss is I actually guessed the email address for the head guy at Kiss, like the top guy. What's his name? Andy.
Man, like Andy, you know. That's who I spoke to.
I can't remember his surname, but Andy is his name. And I actually guessed his email address and sent him an email basically requesting like a pilot or some kind of looking. I sent him some stuff and he actually responded. He replied back and he said no. But anyway, I've always respected him. I've never met the guy, but I've always respected him for actually replying, if I'm honest.
Yeah, yeah, that's proper. But yeah, anyway, yeah, the radio thing, bro. Man should have stuck it out, bro. That's like, I've come full circle now, and I feel like this lockdown really has really took me back to where my passion was, which was discovering music. You know what I mean? Finding new sounds, promoting and pushing new artists, and like I lost my way with that. I got stuck in the rat race of club sets, and there's like I said it yesterday when I was in the yard. I was just like, do I want to go back to playing top 40 urban songs in a club? I don't know, because how I feel right now, no.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like you saying, like, you get that stuck in a consistent way of doing stuff, whether it's the radio, whether it's playing in clubs. You don't want to let stuff go and move forward, but, like, now you're kind of forced to reevaluate where you're at and what you're doing. So if there's a time to really, like, this compound shit has been sat in the back of my mind for ages, and now I'm just like, you know what? We ain't short of time, mate. So I need to go back to what I'm good at and where the passion lies. Like, a lot of people that have just followed me probably don't even know half the stuff we're talking about that we've done in our earlier careers.
Oh, so mate,
It's one of them, but yeah, man. I should never have jumped ship on it. But still, life happens, innit, man. That's probably one of my biggest things looking back, really, throughout my career. Because I feel like I think so. Yeah, because the radio defined me, who I was, and that's what put me on and allowed me to build all the other integral parts that I did in my city in regards to the events, jam. Like, we had one of the biggest brands in the city, and that was probably off the back of building that show. That's probably one of my biggest ones.
It's proper interesting, isn't it? Because, like, your biggest thing that you would change, or the biggest, like, let's just say, mistake that you feel like you've made is by stopping doing something, and mine, in terms of radio, is by not stopping it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel, that's obviously, with me, outside of the clubbing stuff, like my online profile, everything directs to YouTube. Do you know what I mean? Everything that I do is about DJ Double TV, whether it's the interviews, obviously through lockdown, I'm doing this FaceTime thing with people. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've got the content, like I'm doing album reviews on the channel and stuff like that. All the content I'm doing, everything throws back to my channel. But I feel like it would be twice as far if I just stopped radio 1 year earlier.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. I'm trying my hardest right now. I'm just around the corner from 10,000 subscribers on the YouTube channel.
Go on, son.
If I'd had a year, like this time next year, I reckon it'd be 20,000. So if I had a year off of radio when I had got to that point where it was just starting to plateau, but I sailed it out for a year, I'd be a year ahead of myself now. So I think I'd be knocking on 20,000 by now, I think. But
I guess one of the lessons there then is learning to just, sometimes you just got to let stuff go and move forward, innit? And don't overthink.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Situation. I should have, well, it goes back to what I was saying before about when I get to a position, I get comfortable, and then sometimes I'm almost afraid to take the risk.
I hear it,
when
bro.
The risk pays off. But if it doesn't pay off, it feels like it could be devastating. But in reality, it's actually not. Do you know what I mean? Like, it can't take away anything I've done. But what I was afraid of doing is stopping radio and then disappearing. Because I know some people that were on community radio or whatnot, even the same station that I was on, and when they stopped, they literally became no one in the industry because they hadn't worked on their network. They had no backup content. They were now just doing nothing. They weren't a radio presenter, not DJing in the clubs. They were just, and then they just went to being a civilian. Boom, regular job, like 9 to 5.
Guys said went to being a civilian.
Yeah. But, do you know what I mean? They just went to being a civilian.
I hear it.
However, looking back at it, like with hindsight, that could never have happened to me if I'd stopped when I should have stopped, because I had YouTube, because I was DJing in the clubs. Do you know what I mean? Like, I had the other content, but I was afraid to stop doing radio because I'd been there for so long. I was afraid, this was a station in London, by the way, not the one in Bangkok. I'd been there for so long, and I was almost afraid to let that go and then become irrelevant. Does that make sense? And like, just become stagnant. But I should know, man. Like, the mentality I have about this whole industry and about my work, I don't stop working. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm constantly creating something.
This is the thing, like, I see, like, yo, I'm not even trying to send shade at DJs or anything, yeah, but I see so many people during this lockdown, and, like, I know, obviously, you got to take a little bit of time out to look after yourself or whatever, but I see people just not doing nothing, and, like, I don't know whether it's just me personally, but I just don't have it in me to just not do anything. Like, yeah. I feel like my brain doesn't allow that behaviour. Like, I just want to be creating and doing stuff all the time. Like, that's, like you just said then, I'll never fall into that pot where I'm not doing something because it's just instilled in my brain to create and just, not even for the fact that I've not become irrelevant, but this is just what I like doing, bro.
Yeah.
I think, and as the years have evolved, I've just moved into other avenues of work, just like as a natural thing, not because I've want, like, oh, I want to go and be a videographer now. I just had to learn new skills as I was moving through the game, and it's ended up just being a thing. Do you know what I mean?
Like, I think there's a certain mentality you've got to have to do this every day. But, like, there's very successful DJs that just do clubs. Do you know what I mean?
True.
They
100%.
They literally don't create any online content outside of what they post on Instagram. Mm-hmm. But that's fine.
Yeah, of course it is, man.
If that's your business model, if that's how you want to run it, that's fine. Similarly, like, it's also okay to be not creating anything in this time right now. If you're on lockdown
100%.
And you've just decided, you know what, I'm actually going to treat this as a holiday and I'm not working, so I can just clear my mind. Bruv, one of the biggest things I've realized is the rest on people's ears. Like, because I've been doing mixes and stuff and been working still.
That's real still. My ears are getting pounded, bro.
Mine still are, bruv. You know what? And I actually thought to myself, you know what? I'm going to have a day where I literally hammer out a stack of mixes and get almost like a month's worth of content ready in a day or 2 days, and then just switch off and just post. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
schedule it, because I need to give my ears a rest, because I was battering them yesterday doing a mix. So
I feel like it just helps me creating, bro. Like, this lockdown thing, working on this project, it's allowed me to not even think about what's really going on out there.
That's the thing.
I'm enjoying doing it, but it's also not, it's making it a little bit easier. Like,
yeah. Well, I suppose the other thing is, you're not a gamer, are you? You don't play video games.
No,
and
I'm not a gamer.
I know, like,
bro,
one of the things you do in your downtime is watch football, but obviously there's no football. So other than, unless you're going to go online and start watching old matches, like, how do you spend the time? You just create all the time, innit? Or you just
I'm either kicking with wifey or working. Like, they're the two things. Like, I don't really have, like, another... It's weird. Like, yeah, literally, it was football and music, mate, and there's no football.
But the other thing is traveling. I know you love to travel.
Obviously, the traveling is a big thing. Like, I don't move around a lot of people. Like, I know a lot of people. I got a lot of friends, and I connect with a lot. But in general, I move around on my own a lot. I'm a bit of a solo backpacker.
Yeah,
bit weird, mate. So, like, that bit is not bothering me as much.
Mm-hmm.
Not being able to move around freely is where my problem lies. If I want to go and jump on a plane and go next, I want to do it. Like, if I want to go and jump on a train to London and go and link, man, I want to do that. Like, that is what is hurting me the most.
Yeah,
is the freedom of movement. Mm-hmm. Like, if you said to me, yo, you got to be in your studio for a week on your own, I'm cool with that. As long as I've got my socials and I can connect and talk to people still, fine.
As long as there's enough coffee for the week, we're good.
Get me. As long as the Tassimos are loaded, mate. But yeah, it's the freedom thing, because outside of football and travelling and the music, and then obviously time with the missus, I don't really have much more interests, which is mad. I just geek out on stuff. I watch hella YouTube tutorials, camera gear, whatever it is. Like, just trying to take in as much knowledge as possible, innit?
Yeah, learning, using this time to learn is a really good thing. Obviously, as I said at the start, I've learned what a noun is. I know what an adjective is. I know about expanded adjective phrases. That's what I've been learning. But
I'm trying to think about other mistakes, bro, going back to the original point. Like, that I would have changed. I definitely wouldn't have got involved in nightclubs, like, in a business aspect. Like, that's probably another one for me.
From the investment investment.
Yeah, investment wise, like I definitely wouldn't have done that. Like I was naive.
Yeah, I didn't
know what I was getting into. Kind of naive with it, and yeah, looking back, that was a big one. So for people trying, if anyone's looking at investing in clubs or whatever, do your research, man. Make sure you get that shit tight.
To be fair, I'm not sure there's any amateurs out there right now that are going to be investing in nightclubs.
Well, yeah, ain't no one investing in no clubs.
Oh, fuck.
Do you know what I mean? It could have gone one or two ways, bro. It could have gone one way where I would have ended up a very wealthy man and it would have all been lally-dally, or it could have gone the other way, and which it did. So it's one of them, innit? But yeah, looking back, like I feel like the radio stuff and then one or two investments, I feel like everything else has semi been half-decent. Maybe one or two residences here or there that I've walked away from due to my own stubbornness that could have ended up being something that didn't. But in general, I don't know, man. I just feel like the time that we come through, you got to be built a different stuff, man. You come through different back then. Like now, I'm not saying it's easy, but it's the entry level's a lot lower. Do you know what I mean? And we have to learn a lot. Coming through, like I remember going into clubs, bro, with tapes, with fucking tapes, G. I remember going into clubs with tape cassettes, bro. TDK 90s, bro. Like people are gonna be able to figure out my age now. I remember going in and just handing it.
I thought you were talking about to DJ from. I was like,
giving out tapes as in like demos, bro.
Right.
Like, because I was trying to get in clubs before I was even old enough.
Yeah, I don't think I ever gave.
I remember getting a peg up through the local. There was a local club in my ends called the Met Bar, my first residency. I remember getting a peg up through the bathroom window by the resident when I was like 16 or 17, and I went in there and shelled. It was one of them Citronic wall rack mounts with the little jog wheels where you could like you know, you had to find the cue point and it was like and you'd scroll through one of them, bro. And if you didn't get the timing right on the cue point or whatever, I remember going in there and they pegged me up through the bathroom window. This window was high. It was like 12 foot high, bro. I was thinking if I dropped from here, man, feet dead. Anyway, got through the window. I remember just being in the toilets, all these drunks in there. I was like, oh my God, I'm like 16, 17 years of age. Anyway, I ended up shelling it. And I went back a couple of times to do like this set underage, bro. Mad, proper mad. As soon as I hit 18, I had a Friday, Saturday, Sunday residency in this bar.
Yes.
Like getting like, and they were paying me like 120, 150 quid a night, bro. I was like 18, 450 a week and that. Are you mad? I couldn't believe it.
There you go, kids. Any underage DJs listening or young DJs wanting to know how to get into the business, what you do is find
the
local
up through the bathroom
and climb through the toilet window and then sneak in and somehow persuade the DJ that's on to give you a set. Quality.
Bro, it's mad, yeah, because as soon as I was old enough, one of the girls that used to live in the ends, I never forget, she was called Lorraine. She ended up getting the manager's job there.
Shouts to Lorraine.
And she knew about me DJing like locally, and she just knew of me, innit. So as soon as she come in, I got she called me. And like at that age I couldn't believe it. I was like, what? Okay. Yeah. So I mean, so big up Lorraine, man, because like without that gig, I would never have got put on.
Yeah. I think
mad,
like one of the things I've always been in conflict with myself about this, right? Because one of the other things that I would say, I don't know if I could put this down to actually being a mistake, but something that I definitely think has halted a little bit of progress or not given me certain opportunities is the fact that I refuse to play for free.
So, yeah, I hear that. Same.
Or even like I have a price and I stick to it because I believe that's my worth. That is what I'm worth. If you want to book me for an event, it's this much. Mm-hmm. And these are the requirements. And, bruv, in all honesty, like, the rider that I come with and the requirements to book me are really not big at all in terms of...
Man's...
Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm talking, and we've spoken about this in the past, but I'm talking about, like, an overseas booking, for example. You've got to pay the fee, and you've got to pay for flights and accommodation and buy me a meal, basically. That's it. That's all I'm asking for. Everything else is a bonus, but that's all I ask for. But There's been.
I don't even ask for the meal.
You know what? I never actually ask for it, but I kind of, in a certain way, I don't know if it's rude or not, but I kind of expect it, but only because the first few international bookings I ever did, that was just what happened. And going back to the days when I was in doing stuff abroad and entertaining like the guys that I was bringing out for the club always paid for me to take the DJs out for food. So I kind of, that was where that mindset came. Like, okay, well, someone flies you out, they put you up in a hotel, they give you food and they pay your fee. That was where I learned that. So it was just kind of like a given. But yeah, so going back to like, I feel like I was
the same with money, bro. I feel like I was the same as you with the finances, but it was depending on what it would offer me if I took the money out of the equation. Like if it felt beneficial and it was something that was going to help me in any sort of way or plug me into some kind of new reach or whatever, then I'd be willing to work with it. But yeah, primarily,
yeah, but see, this is
you got to go out for what you work. Obviously, looking at it now, we've been in the game a while. I'm not even on that page right now. The amount of brands that are hitting me up trying to get me to stream for free, and I'm just like, I may as well DJ on my, I may as well do my own stream and throw a bloody Cash App link in there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Or a PayPal link, and you're
which I'm not going to do because, like, I'm not even trying to do that either. But I hear it.
100%. I'm not necessarily talking about live streams right now. I'm talking about other opportunities in the past. So, like, there's been various festivals that have hit me up and been like, "All right, do you want to come and do not necessarily the main stage, but they've been like, do you want to come and do a set at such and such on this stage or whatever? I'll come and do an hour set." And we'll put you on the lineup. And it's like, what they're offering is exposure.
Yeah.
Basically.
Exposure credits.
I'm like, you know what? If there's no money on the table, or just for example, like, I've been offered festivals where they're like, yeah, but we'll pay for your petrol. Like, we'll pay your travel cost. And it's like,
I feel like it's a bit cheeky in respect to like, especially when you've done events, bro, and you know how the finances break down and how it works. Like, cutting off a little DJ fee for a DJ is microscopic amounts.
That's the thing. But the problem is, so just for example, they'll have headliners on there that are getting paid thousands of pounds. Like, they might, if it's a big festival, some of the big festivals, bro, they're like 100,000 upwards for the headliners. And now I'm thinking, and you're offering me like £30, which is what it's going to cost me to get there. And so, like, but the problem here is there are DJs that will take that opportunity. There are DJs that just want to play to a crowd, or they just want to say, "Oh, I played at such and such a festival," and the money isn't a thing for them. Like, they would rather just do it for free and they're not getting paid. But this is where I'm conflicted, because I'm like, ultimately, I still to this day feel like, turn it down.
My wife has ordered a flipping skateboard, bruv. She's gonna die. She's gonna die.
The skateboard's arrived. Yeah,
bro, but, the skateboard has arrived. She's gonna be out here like Tony Hawk's.
Ultimately, yeah, going back to this point, ultimately, like, there's certain DJs that can now say like, "Oh yeah, I've played at this festival, I've played at that festival, da 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 da." But
yeah,
I'm so conflicted with myself, because it's like, yeah, cool, you get to play to X amount of people, and some of those people may then become fans of you. So
yeah,
in terms of your branding, you're growing it. Right?
I feel like it comes down to what you can bring to the table with it too, bro. Like, if you're going to do one of them little sets and get peanuts, if you can bring all your other shit together around it and make that shit look so lit on your socials and bring other assets and that, you're going to get a lot out of it. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, but again, though, I don't necessarily think it's a great thing to do for the socials, because what people do with it is they'll do a festival set for free and then they'll post it on their socials like they were the headliner. Do you know what I mean?
There's a way to go about it. You can't put it
out there that they were doing it for free. they put it out there like they got paid thousands to be there, and it's actually like, no, you even had to pay your cameraman to come with you, so it cost you money to do that set. This is what I don't understand. Again, going back to the conflict here, is it's like, I feel like my mentality around that may have blocked me from certain opportunities. And I know one, for example, a very well-established artist who's out doing world, or before this, was doing world tours. Like, he's touring in every different country. I had the opportunity to be his tour DJ at the start, but they couldn't pay. And I was already making money from the clubs, so I turned it down. Because they were like, right now, there's no budget. We're almost doing this club shows for free. Okay. But then now he's making thousands, and I know his DJ's getting paid a stack and making a lot of money. And it's like, if I had if I'd looked at it with the long-term mentality, that's the position I would have been in right now.
And
this is an artist that I championed from day one. So it wasn't even that I didn't believe in the artist. It was a case of I've got a career right now, and I don't want to go back to doing events for free. Do you know what I mean? Like, plus, my son was alive, so I had a family to look after and had rent to pay at the time. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, there were other factors.
Sometimes it's not always about money. That's what I'm saying. But like, if you've got bills and you've got children and you've got a situation to deal with, like, I know some dudes that have come in the game that have come from a background of money, or I mean, financially already cool. So going out and doing that kind of stuff to put themselves on, it's not really affecting their situation. But some people, like for people like us, it's our livelihood, and it keeps a roof over our head, and it allows us to, I mean, we've got to look after our children or whatever. Like,
I think the problem is, because, like, going back as well to the, like, doing the overseas booking. So an example is, like, there's been times where I've been offered an overseas booking and they're like, right, okay, it's a fee less than what I'd get paid in the UK, and they're covering flights and accommodation. But, or it might even be like, we'll cover your flights and accommodation and that's all we've got the budget for. There's no fee. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Certain people would take that just so that they can say they're an international DJ. But like, for me, if you've seen what I can do in a club and you really believe in the brand, this is the fee. If you're willing to put the money in, cool. We're going to have a sick event. If you're not, that's also cool. Like, we're not falling out over it, but I'm not.
Do you know where the problem is for that? The minute you go out for free and you take that gig for flights and accommodation, you instantly fall into that bracket. Like, if you don't believe in your own fee, and you're willing to demand it, nobody's going to pay it. Like, once you go out and do that free gig or whatever, like, and then work it, so, oh yeah, well, my guy done this for flights and accommodation or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
The energies are then out there for you to not be able to ever, you're not going to be able to scale up your monies or what you're trying to get. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, oh, yeah, I hear you, bro. It's definitely a conflicting one. In my early career, bro, I did a couple of gigs where I didn't make it about the money, but I soon learned my value, and I was like, it's not the one. Do you know what I mean? Same as you. I've lost opportunities, bro, same way. Like,
My very first international gig, I did for free. But the reason was, I was already on holiday.
Okay.
And I happened to create an opportunity for myself at a bar. But that then led to, I think I've told this story before, that situation, me doing that set for free, led to an opportunity where the club owner of the biggest club on the island heard me play and said, tomorrow night, can you come to the club and play? But that's when I was like,
sick.
Well, yeah, but you're going to have to pay for it.
Yeah.
And even then the price wasn't that big, but by doing that, I shelled it in the club. They then said, we want you to be our resident next year. And the following year, so when I went back to be their resident, bruv, I put a big price tag on it and I made a lot of fucking money that year.
My guy.
So by doing that first set for free, I created an opportunity for myself. But that's where I feel like in some of these instances, if you ask for the set or if you ask for the opportunity, I think that's where you've got to be like, well, okay, yeah, I've got to kind of bow down to
If you're asking for it, you don't get the leeway.
If somebody asks you to do the set, that's where you've got to put the price tag on it and not do it for free. You have to value your shit. And when festivals and promoters and whatnot come around and they're like, oh, yeah, but we don't have the budget for such and such. It's like, cool. In that case, there's a DJ that bought a controller when he was on lockdown and he's now been DJing in his bedroom for 2 weeks. Book him instead and see how good your event is. Because I bring something to the table and I help add value to you. That's what I genuinely believe, which is why I don't work for free.
I agree. If you don't believe in your own source, bro, then you can't expect anyone else to. You've got to be confident in what you bring to the table. And like you say, sometimes you've got to slap that price tag on there, man. I fully agree with everything you just said, Arkid.
But going back to the original topic, there is definitely situations that I feel like I might have lost out on certain opportunities because of the unwillingness to work for free. Do you know what I mean?
Talking about that quick one before we start wrapping up, that the financial thing, probably another one of my mistakes is not being wise with my money, innit, when I've had like good times. Even though like a lot of money probably went on traveling and doing whatever else, because when I was younger, bro, even getting on a plane was a thing. Like, it was never going to happen. So like when I was actually getting paid, I wanted to like live a little, do you know what I mean? But I let that go on a little bit too long. So when I look back, like for example, when Jam was running and everything was great, like I should definitely have stacked more peas, bro. Like, because for times like now, there is no work, like you just don't, like no one even seeing this coming. Obviously, financially, we're cool, like we're okay, but you don't know how long this is going to go on for. So like when I look back to them times when everything was great, like I'm DJing 4 or 5 nights a week, I've got my own club night every Saturday, like everything is sick, like it couldn't be any better. I should definitely have been filling up a bunker. I feel like financially, like people, like that was a mistake for me, like being clever with your money, like save for them rainy days, man, because this shit is like footballers, it only comes in once and it don't go on forever. Like you could end up being Disco Dave DJ until you're 50, 60 years of age, but that ain't where I want to be, mate. So it's one of them. Right?
Yeah.
I would have been way more sensible with my finances, man. But when I look back, like half the stuff I've done, I wouldn't have been able to do it. Like the traveling, seeing the world, like I've always had this thing where I wanted to see the world, bro, before I die. Everything, like traveling's a thing for me. So yeah man.
You better go on Google Maps now, then.
Get me. Now I'm just on Google Maps 3D version, walking around streets, taking in the views.
It's depressing, isn't it?
Well, yeah, man. That's pretty much it for me, G. Like, there's probably more, but off the top of my head, yeah, man.
Yeah, I think,
and here we are.
They're the major ones. The other thing I would say, obviously we need to wrap up now because I've got to go and make Roman lunch.
heck, here we go.
Oh no, it's bad. Back into daddy mode. I think one very, very important thing to do, which I kind of didn't realise straight away, but was smart enough to adapt quickly when I did realise, so I feel like I got to grips on it, is about being a DJ is about being a brand. So like, get a logo that you're happy with. Get a logo that represents... It doesn't even have to represent what you do. It doesn't have to have headphones in it or... Do you know what I mean? Like, there was a great example, like Apple, for example. Their logo is an apple with a bite mark out of it. Has fucking absolutely nothing to do with electronics. Windows. Windows is a window. Nothing to do with electronics. Do you know what I mean? Like, all of these... I saw this example the other day. There's loads and loads of logos, company logos. Shell is another one, oil company. The logo is a shell. It has nothing to do with oil and petrol. But like...
That's legit.
They have... there's so many. I saw a list and there's so many of them. So many. So like branding and coming up with a good, strong logo that will become recognizable is something that I think is definitely a learning point for a lot of new DJs, and learning the business that you are in, learning how it works, how clubs work, how record labels work, how streaming works, how music distribution works. Do you know what I mean? Like, every aspect of the business is something that I wish I had learned early, because I've been playing catch up, brother. I've been playing catch up ever since I got into presenting. Do you know what I mean? But had I realized early, like, okay, well, being a DJ isn't just being a DJ, it's actually being part of the music business. And
yeah, that's real.
When Travis Scott drops a new album, the first people to get it are the DJs that have a friend in the label.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to wait until release day, because actually some people are getting it 2 weeks ahead of time. Do you know what I mean? Which is how you're hearing DJs play, like, exclusives don't really exist anymore, but you know what I mean? Like, when you hear DJs play songs and you're like, how the fuck have they got that song? Like, I've got songs because of the stuff that I do with certain labels. I've got songs now in my track wise that I'm working on radio projects for that no one on radio even has yet. Because, do you know what I mean? It hasn't been pushed to radio because I haven't done the radio edits. I'm working on them right now. So,
yeah.
And it's about, like, the music exists. Some of the music that's out exists way in advance of its release. So, if you make...
I remember finding about mail outs, bro. I remember the first time I got on a mail out. I couldn't believe it. I was like, bruh, this is legit, yeah. The music comes to your house for
that's
free.
But even now, bro, I had someone shouted me the other day and they were like, I spend a lot of money on releases and buying MP3s, and I'm a
don't
member.
And they don't even know about mail outs.
Yeah, no. And they said, and I'm a member of DJ City, but I don't know where else to get music. And I spend so much money on music. Where else can I find good music, but that I don't have to pay for because I'm already spending a lot? So I just gave them a list of all the pluggers. I was like, search for these guys, find their email address, ask to be on the mailing list. Because
you know what, you're right about learning your industry, bro, because I reckon there's a lot of DJs out there that probably don't even know about them kind of things.
No,
even
not
still
at all.
Now because a lot of people can get in it so quick now, they're not even trying to look. Like, I remember doing the early street parties for like Sony and Atlantic with Matchstick and Reggie Styles back in the day, and like they taught me all about the mail outs and servicing records and music. Like, obviously now it's a little bit different, but yeah, I agree, man, definitely to be learning your industry again. Like, going back to when we come through, like, I think we were a little bit lucky doing that street team stuff because it allowed us to plug in from early. Like, I knew
street,
about the mail outs
don't exist
how,
anymore did it
how yeah they don't even exist, like, and we learned about that stuff very, very early. I remember being 19-20 hosting album launch parties in the local clubs.
Yeah, same.
Like, I remember doing the album. I remember doing the launch for like Cassie, Me and You and stuff like that. Like, big album project launches. They'd send all the posters and the CDs to your gaff, and you'd
copies
give them
to
away
give
on
away
the night and
send
pictures back to the label of the night and stuff, all that kind of stuff. Like, it's completely, obviously, it's completely different now, man. I thought that shit was dope though. That was a good way to tag into marketing and help your events, man. And
that was a great way to do it.
And get free material and like official album launch parties and all that. Like,
you know what?
They
need to bring that. Some artists need to bring that back. Like, single 100%. Launch parties in the clubs. 100%. Give away merch.
Like, imagine Travis Scott sends out his album and his marketing stuff to like 20 clubs in England. And then there's big album project release parties and there's Travis visuals on the screen, official directly from the team. Bro, with social media and that now, are you crazy? It's a no-brainer.
That guy's a different breed, man. He did a concert on Fortnite the other day.
Bro, it was lit. I don't even like that shit.
My son told me about it. He was like, Travis Scott, he was singing on Fortnite. Obviously, I saw it on the socials, but Roman is 7 years old. And he
it
is
looked
now,
sick, bro. It was sick.
I play a bit of Travis Scott, but not a lot in the house. Obviously, like, Roman loves all the stuff I listen to anyway, but I don't play a lot of Travis Scott in the house. But Roman is now a Travis Scott fan because Travis Scott did a concert on Fortnite and Roman saw it. So now
these
he's listening
know,
to
these
songs.
Guys know what they're doing, innit? They know what they're doing.
Very smart.
The concert, it was sick, bro. You could run around and, like, you're just running around in the game and he's just there, like, 100 foot tall.
crazy.
Anyway,
I've got to wrap it up because I've got a 7-year-old boy that needs lunch, and I'm not gonna lie, my stomach's grumbling as well, so I've got to go and eat some lunch.
Do your thing, because I've got to go straight to the studio now, so I'm off.
Yeah, we announced it last week, but we are definitely working on the details behind this. And now that I have a phone and it's fixed and it's working, we will be doing a Q&A, a live Q&A on the Talkover Instagram. So at TalkoverPod is the Instagram handle. So yeah, yes. If you're listening and you don't follow us already, please do, because we're going to be doing a live Q&A on Instagram Live. So any questions you guys put to us, we're going to be answering for you live on Instagram Live.
Yeah, man. Keep a lookout on the on our Instas, innit? I'll get some artwork up with the details of where you, time and when you can listen and all that crap. So yeah,
Keep a lookout. So at TalkoverPod on Instagram and Twitter as well. If you're talking about it, if you're sending clips, sharing clips, hashtag TalkoverPodClart. Yeah, it's Stylist just did the biggest yawn.
Yeah, bro, I'm struggling today, bro. That's just took all my energy out of me now. I'm done for the day, mate.
Double and Stylo, TalkoverPodClart. And tell a friend to tell a friend, you bitch.
Peace out, BloodClart.